Today is Thursday, April 15th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Duofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden withdraws all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th.
We went to war with clear goals. We achieved those objectives. Bin Laden is dead, and al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq.
Also, a possible summit between President Biden and Putin, or not.
Amid the escalation, Biden offered to hold a summit in the coming months with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Plus, COVID variant found in Brazil sets off alarm bells among health experts. These stories and more are next. President Joe Biden has announced his plans to withdraw all 2,500 American troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, months later than the May 1st deadline that the Trump administration and the Taliban agreed on last year. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kiwara has this report.
After 20 years, close to $1 trillion, more than 2,300 American deaths, and the loss of tens of thousands of Afghan lives, the U.S. is saying enough.
We went to war with clear goals. We achieved those objectives. Bin Laden is dead, and al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And it's time to end the forever war.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden announced that all 2,500 American troops will withdraw from Afghanistan by September 11th. 2 decades after the U.S. invaded the country following attacks by the terrorist group al-Qaeda, who sought haven there. The Trump administration had previously set May 1st as the withdrawal deadline, providing that the Taliban, the Muslim fundamentalist group controlling Afghanistan, cut ties with al-Qaeda. Biden set his withdrawal without conditions, arguing there is no point to continue to fight an intractable war and expect different results. Some Republicans say the Taliban will regain control and hurt Afghan and U.S. interests.
President Biden, unfortunately, has chosen the highest risk option available, which is to leave no matter what.
In coordination with the U.S., NATO on Wednesday announced withdrawal of 10,000 of its forces from Afghanistan by May 1st.
Any Taliban attacks on our troops during this period will be met with a forceful response.
Biden said the U.S. and its allies will continue training and equipping almost 300,000 Afghan troops, support humanitarian efforts, and engage diplomatically.
We will support peace talks between the government of Afghanistan and the Taliban facilitated by the United Nations, and will continue to support the rights of Afghan women and girls.
Response to Biden's decision to pull troops in September instead of May, the Taliban issued a warning, increasing fears of violence and the collapse of the Afghan government.
There's probably no option that significantly reduces the level of violence. There's also probably no option on the table to build the Afghanistan that the United States probably had in mind when they invested more than $1 trillion in the war. And so, yes, this is probably the best of a series of bad options.
The Afghan Peace Council, a body created to negotiate with the Taliban, is set to meet in Turkey later this month, but peace prospects are dim. Following his remarks, Biden visited Arlington National Cemetery to pay respects to soldiers who lost their lives in the war. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is making an unannounced visit to Afghanistan to sell Afghan leaders and a wary public on President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw all American troops from the country. Blinken was meeting with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani, his governing partner Abdullahi Abdullahi, and civic leaders a day after Biden announced that the remaining 2,500 U.S. troops in Afghanistan would be coming home before the 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks that led to the U.S. invasion. His trip also came after NATO allies immediately followed suit, saying their roughly 7,000 non-American forces in Afghanistan would also be departing within a few months. Female journalists in Afghanistan are calling on Kabul to include their representatives at peace talks to ensure media and women's rights are protected. VOA's Sam Samasirat has more in this report.
At least 8 journalists and media workers, including at least 4 women, have been killed since peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban began. A Human Rights Watch report says the Taliban is targeting journalists, including women.
We have many concerns over the targeted killings of female journalists and activists. We hope this summit has a positive outcome for issues related to women.
That's part of the reason why a group of female reporters has told the Afghanistan's peace ministry a female journalist must be included in the Afghan delegation headed to Turkey for peace talks. The goal is to ensure their rights are protected in any deal with the Taliban.
The upcoming Turkey summit is crucial, and we need one female journalist to be there and inform us about what is happening.
The Afghan delegation has said repeatedly it will defend the rights of women and journalists in talks with the Taliban. But the journalists want greater assurances.
We don't accept that we should share our wishes with a middleman. We as journalists want our own representative at the Turkey summit and for it to be our own voice there expressing what we want.
The Turkey summit is important for the peace talks process, but the talks have not reached a level where the government can discuss every issue with the Taliban, said State Minister for Peace Affairs Said Sadat Mansour Nathiri.
We had an important meeting with President Ghani, where he shared the political map to peace with us. When we speak about the Constitution, it's important to us that we defend the rights of women in the peace process and the Constitution.
At least 30% of those participating in peace talks should be women, says Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission. Its chief, Shahrzad Akbar, says she is concerned about the lack of public information on the government agenda for the Turkey summit and that an all-male delegation is not a good formula for success. The summit is due to take place in Istanbul later this month. For Samsa Masirat in Kabul, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdeth, VOA News.
President Joe Biden has offered to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin for a summit in a third country, while at the same time warning Moscow that any aggression against Ukraine will have consequences. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Britain's Sky News filmed Russian troops deploying in the Voronezh area of Russia, close to the border with Ukraine. The largest troop buildup since Russia's 2014 illegal annexation of the Crimean Peninsula of Ukraine has alarmed leaders in Kyiv and the West, including U.S. President Joe Biden.
The president voiced our concerns over the sudden Russian military buildup and increasing aggression on the border of Ukraine and called on Russia to de-escalate tensions.
After meeting with NATO allies in Brussels, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the U.S. will continue to provide Ukraine with material support to defend its territorial integrity and called on Russia to cease its provocations.
The national security architecture, our team, will always present our president with a range of options that are focused on employing all of the elements of national power that we have available to us when we consider options to present to the president.
Russian-backed separatists and Ukrainian forces have been fighting in eastern Ukraine since 2014. More than 14,000 people have died in the conflict. Russia says it sent troops to its western borders for training exercises in response to threatening NATO actions. Amid the escalation, Biden offered to hold a summit in the coming months with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Russia expert Michael Kimmage of Catholic University told VOA he thinks that is a wise move.
So signal American commitment, resolve, that there's not going to be concessions made or that the U.S. is approaching this from a position of weakness, but at the same time be willing to talk and to negotiate to the extent that these two countries can.
Several U.S. lawmakers have expressed alarm that Russia might be preparing to invade Ukraine. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The Biden administration on Thursday announced the expulsion of 10 Russian diplomats and sanctions against nearly three dozen people and companies as it moved to hold the Kremlin accountable for interference in last year's presidential election and the hacking of federal agencies. The actions are the first retaliatory measure announced against the Kremlin for the hack known as the SolarWinds breach. Russian hackers are believed to have infected widely used software with malicious code, enabling them to access the networks of at least nine agencies in what U.S. officials believe was an operation aimed at mining government secrets. Last month, Biden replied, quote, "I do," unquote, when asked if he thought Putin was, quote, "a killer." He said the days of the U.S., quote, "rolling over," unquote, to Putin were done. Putin later recalled his ambassador to the U.S. and pointed at the U.S. history of slavery and slaughtering Native Americans and the atomic bombing of Japan in World War II. Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen told emissaries visiting at U.S. President Joe Biden's request on Thursday that the island would work with the United States to deter threats from Chinese military activities. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
A delegation sent by U.S. President Joe Biden to Taiwan met with the island's leader, Tsai Ing-wen, on Thursday, where she said Taiwan would work with Washington to counter military activity by China.
We are very willing to work with like-minded countries, including the U.S., to jointly safeguard the peace and stability of the Indo-Pacific and deter adventurous maneuvers and provocations.
In the last few months, Taiwan has complained that China's Air Force sends almost daily missions near its air defense identification zone. Most recently on Monday, a record number of Chinese fighter jets and nuclear-capable bombers flew into Taiwan's ADIZ. And Wednesday, China announced it would begin 5 days of live-fire drills off part of its coast facing Taiwan. The emissaries visiting Taiwan include former U.S. officials, and their arrival was meant to signal Biden's commitment to safeguarding Taiwan and its democracy. Former U.S. Senator Chris Dodd assured Tsai the U.S. is Taiwan's, quote, reliable, trusted friend, and the alliance is stronger than ever. China described its military exercises near Taiwan as combat drills and said the U.S. meeting in Taiwan, quote, will only exacerbate the tense situation in the Taiwan Strait.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. The coronavirus pandemic will cause significant global unrest for several years, U.S. intelligence chiefs warned lawmakers Wednesday. In the first public worldwide threats briefing in more than 2 years, China's failure to stop the spread of COVID-19, along with increasing competition with the United States, was named as the top threat. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
The global economic and public health crises caused by the coronavirus pandemic will only increase worldwide unrest, U.S. intelligence officials warned lawmakers Wednesday. Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines.
We face a broad array of longstanding and emerging threats whose intersection is raising the potential for cascading crises. Our increasingly interconnected and mobile world offers enormous opportunities, but at the same time, it multiplies our challenges.
The United States faces threats from Russia, North Korea, and Iran, according to an annual assessment released this week by 18 U.S. intelligence agencies. Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
The threat assessment goes into wide detail on a variety of challenges that we face. But I have some issues in particular I'd like to address. Cybersecurity, election security, the rise in domestic violent extremism, and obviously the rise of China, and particularly the Chinese Communist Party.
China's vaccine diplomacy just the latest example of direct competition with the U.S. when it comes to global influence. Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines.
China increasingly is a near-peer competitor, challenging the United States in multiple areas while pushing to revise global norms in ways that favor the authoritarian Chinese system.
And in the wake of the massive SolarWinds cyber attack blamed on Russian hackers, U.S. lawmakers said cybersecurity must be taken more seriously. Republican Senator Marco Rubio.
SolarWinds hack illustrates how easily U.S. infrastructure can be compromised. It's not hard to imagine how much destruction could be levied if our adversaries were determined to conduct such an attack beyond espionage on things like the power grid or our water supply.
Election security, also a major tension point with Russia following last year's U.S. presidential election. Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
Russia undertook a sophisticated disinformation campaign in 2020 to undercut our current president and to bolster the candidacy of the former one. We need to make clear that those who perpetrated this hostile interference will again pay a price.
This week's briefing for lawmakers marks the first time in 2 years that U.S. intelligence agencies have publicly outlined worldwide threats. The practice was suspended during the last year of the Trump administration. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The killing of a black motorist during a police traffic stop earlier this week has raised tensions in the U.S. state of Minnesota, which is preparing for an outcome in former police officer Derek Chauvin's murder trial. VOA's Jesusman Oni has more.
Tensions are boiling over in the U.S. state of Minnesota surrounding the police-involved deaths of two black men, with daily protests and clashes taking place since Sunday when 20-year-old Dante Wright was fatally shot during a traffic stop.
Put her in jail like they would do any one of us.
Police officer Kim Potter was arrested and is facing second-degree manslaughter charges for what officials say was an accidental discharge of her gun that killed Wright. She has been released on bail.
If she didn't know in 26 years the difference in size and weight of a gun as opposed to a taser, then how was she a veteran in policing? How was she even on the force that long?
Just a few kilometers away, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin is on trial for criminal charges stemming from the death last May of George Floyd. A pathologist testifying for Chauvin's legal team Wednesday said there was no evidence that Chauvin's knee impacted any of the vital structures of Floyd's neck and that multiple factors led to his death.
The toxicology, the fentanyl and methamphetamine, there is exposure to a vehicle exhaust, so potentially carbon monoxide poisoning, or at least an effect from increased carbon monoxide in his bloodstream, and paraganglionoma, or the other natural disease process that he has. So all of those combined to cause Mr. Floyd's death.
He contradicted several medical experts for the prosecution who testified that Floyd died primarily due to a lack of oxygen from the way he was pinned to the pavement for more than 9 minutes. Prosecutors questioned Fowler's findings.
If you apply pressure to someone's neck and squeeze until the person becomes unresponsive, and you maintain that pressure for at least 4 minutes, you will cause irreversible brain damage because you will have starved the brain of oxygen. Is that true?
Correct. It takes 4 minutes of no supply of oxygen to the brain to cause irreversible brain damage.
The White House Wednesday called for Congress to pass police reform legislation.
Too often in this country, law enforcement uses unnecessary force, and too often that results in the death of black Americans.
The deaths of Floyd and Wright have led to protests and calls for racial justice in the United States. Jason Samelny, VOA News, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. France's National Assembly on Thursday passed a security bill to extend police powers, despite criticism from civil rights activists who fear it will threaten efforts to denounce police abuse. Among other measures, the law makes it a criminal offense to publicly identify a police officer with the intent of causing harm to the officer. Beijing's top official in Hong Kong is warning foreign forces not to interfere with national security in the city, threatening retaliation amid tensions between China and Western powers. The U.S., Britain, and their allies have condemned China's tightened control over Hong Kong, including the sweeping national security law and electoral reforms that have all but silenced the once vibrant opposition in the semi-autonomous territory. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The Free Burma Rangers, a humanitarian group that has aided ethnic groups in Myanmar and reported on the conflicts for more than 25 years, has increased aids in the border regions of Karen State. The Myanmar military has hit the region with airstrikes recently. The group has worked in other countries, including Sudan, Syria, Iraq, and Kurdistan. From Thailand, Steve Stanford has more.
In Myanmar's Karen State, thousands of internally displaced people, or IDPs, are desperately seeking food, shelter, and medical aid following increased government attacks in recent weeks, including airstrikes. For David Eubank and the Free Burma Rangers, where more than 30 teams are currently in Karen State, the challenges are daunting.
And so our teams move to where the fighting is, and right now our teams are with every displaced group, giving medical care, helping people who are wounded or sick, also coordinating to bring food in, bringing tarps for shelter because people are hiding in the jungle, and then telling their stories and trying to get the news out so people in the world know what's happening.
Many of the members of the FBR are ethnic Karen, including the group's deputy director, K-Posse, known by his nickname, Monkey. A former resistance fighter in the Karenian area of Myanmar, K-Posse has seen much pain and suffering over the years in his war-torn homeland. Now he helps document human rights abuses, taking photos and videos with the aim of helping friends and relatives who remain in the country.
Right now, the villagers are in trouble. Our FBR medic teams are working to rescue them from the violence. At the same time, our families, wives, and kids have to run and hide in the jungle and the caves.
It's a traumatic experience for the internally displaced persons, many of whom have faced repeated upheaval in the past in a conflict that's lasted more than seven decades. But one of the most damning developments, according to UBank, is a new method of air attacks being used by Myanmar forces.
In over 25 years of working in Karen State, I've never seen a bombing, and now we have them every day. The other surprising thing is the indiscriminate nature of their bombing, killing civilians, mostly civilians who are killed. But that's exactly what they're doing in Rangoon and the other cities. They're killing civilians, kids, women, it doesn't matter. So it's the same. It's just what weapon they can use.
As the crisis in Myanmar shows no signs of letting up, humanitarian groups both within the country and abroad are expected to increase relief efforts for all civilians. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Jamal Hussein had dreamed of a better life in Saudi Arabia, but having become stranded like thousands of others in war-torn Yemen, he had to journey across the country to escape back to Ethiopia. Imam McCarthy of Reuters has more.
Ethiopian migrant Jamal Hussein is waiting to board a flight out of Yemen. It's the final stage of his journey through a war-torn country and also the end to his dream of a better life in Saudi Arabia.
I used to work on the cat fields in Ethiopia, and then I wanted to go to Saudi to work, so I came to Yemen. That's when I found out there was a war in Yemen. I had not known.
Many more like Hussein are calling it quits. It's the reversal of a long-standing and often perilous flow of migrants by sea and then north through Yemen to Gulf states for work. But coronavirus restrictions and conflict have left many stranded in Yemen. The country has been mired in violence since 2015. Millions are on the brink of famine. Having reached Sana'a in the country's north, which is under the control of the Houthi movement, Hussein says he was detained with other migrants in a holding facility. Last month, he survived a fire at the centre that killed dozens. After the blaze, Hussein says the Houthis dropped him in the desert and he made his way to the port city of Aden. There, he found help from the UN's migration agency. The IOM says 11,000 people have returned to the Horn of Africa by boat this year. Dozens have died in recent weeks after people smuggling boats capsized. That's why the IOM is now putting on flights to return migrants safely. Hussein's flight was on Tuesday. He's one of an initial group of 1,100 Ethiopians approved for voluntary humanitarian return. But the IOM warns that more than 32,000 migrants remain stranded across Yemen in dire circumstances.
That's Imam McCarthy of Reuters. India's two largest cities have imposed stringent restrictions on movements and one plan to use hotels and banquet halls to treat coronavirus patients. Those moves come as new infections in the country shot past 200,000 Thursday amid a devastating surge that is straining a fragile health system. The soaring cases and deaths have forced India to delay exports of vaccines to other countries. India is a major producer of COVID-19 shots, and its pivot to focus on domestic demands has weighed heavily on global efforts to end the pandemic. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofoa in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.